Hey guys, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and I'm really excited that you have decided to take time out of your busy schedules to come and hang out today. We're really grateful for you tuning in. And if you have been listening to the podcast for a while, we really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Hopefully you have subscribed so that you never miss an episode. But if not, or if you are new to the show, get yourself over to iTunes, Stitcher, animaltrainingacademy.com, or whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on, and hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss a single episode. We are bringing you today's episode on behalf of the Animal Training Academy, or ATA, membership. If you like the conversations in these podcasts, then I want to invite you to continue them with like-minded people within the ATA membership area, which you can find out more about over on the ATA website. Within the membership, you can get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web classes, plus a huge library of videos and projects to problem solve different training situations. And we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group, forums area, and WhatsApp chat groups. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior nerds. But we will get started on today's episode, where we will be talking to one, Peggy Hogan. Like many people, Peggy loves animals and has a passion for training. She currently owns 5 minis, 2 full-sized horses, and 3 parrots. Learning from clicker trainers of other species, Peggy investigated ways to add more shaping, capturing, luring, and targeting to her program, and she experienced how horses would learn complex behaviors freely if given the choice. She currently teaches, gives clinics, offers online courses, and generously shares knowledge of clicker training. She has been a speaker at Clicker Expo every year since 2013 and is thrilled to be presenting at Clicker Expo 2019. Her goal is to learn how to better share this amazing technology with people in the horse community. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome one, Peggy Hogan, to the show today, who is patiently waiting by. Peggy, how are you?
It's good to be here with you, Ryan. And the words were so kind, and it's wonderful to hear them reflected, because I could say, without the specific details, what I see in you and your training and what you've brought to the training community is such a simpatico version of sharing this, like you said, amazing technology. And so I'm honored and pleased to be here with you so that we can just open up everybody's eyes and share this information. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to come and hang out with us and send messages back and forth to me today and play with technology for 30 minutes before jumping on here and getting this all working.
Yay, technology.
So we appreciate all the time and effort and energy you're putting into Animal Training Academy and disseminating this information to the wider animal training and horse community. Thank you very much. Let's dive into the first question today. Peggy, could you please take us back to where you first learned about positive reinforcement animal training and some of the animals you started training it and using it with?
Well, interestingly enough, like a lot of people, I had a passion for animal training really at a very early age. I had decided that I wanted to be a professional trainer, in my teens. And we would go to Universal Studios in Los Angeles, and I would watch all of the animal shows, and I would harass the poor people afterwards. After the show, I'd run up there and beg and ask, and how do I do this? And I want to do this. As life would have it, I wasn't able to pursue it at that point in my life. But still, my passion and love for animals continued. I rode horses and enjoyed being around horses at an early age. Again, my mom was a farm girl, and she knew that I was horse crazy. So she took me to a stables in Los Angeles, where I learned to ride. And then eventually she would just drop me off there and I'd be able to ride. This was actually over by Griffith Park. And it was all wonderful. So I would say I learned about animal training early. And as a child, you don't have the same power. So it's not like my relationship with these horses was built on coercion, because I wasn't strong enough to make it happen. But as I became an adult and then ended up with my own horses, I started hearing more about some of the other ways of teaching horses. And I explored those ways. And I'm going to share a story. It's a personal story, Ryan. And it's really important because it is how things turned around for me. I had, at the time, I was teaching kids camps, and we had little kids with us, and we had a pony. And I did this for 9 years. And there was a little pony, not a mini, but a pony that had started getting a little uncomfortable with how it was being handled. And it was swinging its hips towards a child, which is just flat dangerous. So it wasn't any behavior that I could just ignore. And I needed to address that behavior. So I used the tools I had learned it was negative reinforcement, pressure release. But I started using those tools to move this little pony's hip away from the kids so that it learned that when the rope pressure was applied, to not swing towards the child. And I was feeling pretty good about how quickly I got this change in this little pony. And then I turned around and I looked at the faces of the children that were watching me. And I got to tell you, I can still get choked up about it because their little looks and their little eyes told me everything. And they just thought I was, you know, the Wicked Witch of the West that had just, you know, hounded on this little pony. And by most standards, this wouldn't have been abuse. But nonetheless, the techniques, they were reflected in these little kids' eyes. And I went, this is not right. Okay, I just saw in the mirror. And things need to change. And about that time, I heard from actually a natural horsemanship clinician. He told me about Alexandra Kurland. And he said, you got to see this stuff. It's really cool. Now, this is a guy that was traveling around showing people natural horsemanship, but he still thought enough of positive reinforcement and clicker training that he told me about her. And I was absolutely taken. So, and this was not long after she emerged. So I completely immersed myself in that style of training and did everything I could to learn about it. Because there weren't too many people out doing this, I started investigating people like Ken Ramirez and later Susan Friedman. And that's where I learned so much of this about shaping and capturing, targeting, the tools that inspired me, because here I could get enormous amounts of behavior and phenomenal changes in the horse, and I never even had to lift the lead rope. I could do this at liberty. So that's kind of how the path opened up for me. This is how I progressed. And during that process, I ended up being influenced by a wonderful clinician named Peggy Cummings. She still travels around the world teaching. Her technique is not clicker training, but she has a way of being with the animals and helping people in their own body presentation. That is yet another way that we can be around our horses and influencing them and not adding aversive just in how we approach them. So she was a great influence, but it was clicker training that just turned my life around.
So you might have just come up with the title for this episode, The Techniques Were Reflected in These Kids' Eyes.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Emperor's New Clothes. You remember that story? It truly was. It's seen through the eyes of children and the courage to face that look and do something about it.
And before that moment, did you have any kind of cognitive dissonance or conflicting thoughts in your mind about what you were doing? Or you mentioned there you're pretty confident in what you were doing, but that was the switch? Or was it the final thing that made you do that switch?
That is a great question. No, that was the final thing, because inside me, it's like, no, this is not why I signed up for this. But I also was being guided by people that I thought were pretty amazing professionals. And, you know, that whole thing about the end result, you know, the end justifying the means. But no, there was a lot of cognitive dissonance as the years progressed. And I thought, this just isn't why I got back into horses. This is not why I got back into horses. So there, it was the launching, those little looks and those faces absolutely launched me.
And so for any listeners of this podcast who potentially have cognitive dissonance. So they are just maybe being exposed to this information, this technology, and the stuff that you're offering and sharing, but they're still doing techniques that might not make them feel good. What, you know, what can we unpack from this experience that you've had, and what can we share with the listeners to help them on their journeys and to maybe push them over the edge to say, hey, I've got to make a change here.
You know, I would say, Ryan, it's a shaping process with people. So if you're feeling the cognitive dissonance and you're thinking, I'm just not sure I like this, then pick one thing out of the potential enormous array of things we can do with horses using positive reinforcement. Pick one thing and start with that. Shape that behavior. Learn a little bit more. Apply a little bit more as you go along. You don't have to just suddenly decide you're going to shape and use positive reinforcement for every single behavior and cut the cord. But by the way, I did that. But you don't have to do that. You can still say it's a shaping process and just start adding to your knowledge base and biting the bullet. Just do one behavior, then add another, then add another.
You say, for you, when this experience happened with these kids, and that was kind of the final thing which tipped you over the edge, what I've found for talking for lots of trainers on their journeys is that when they have that kind of shift, they want to know everything tomorrow. And there's quite a lot of emotional discomfort in that they don't have the knowledge and skill set there. You're saying break it down though and focus on one. What about your journey? Did you, when that shift happened, were you like, oh my God, I need to know everything now? Or were you quite comfortable in your journey moving forward? Was it challenging?
No, it was challenging. And just like you mentioned of the other trainers, I tend to get immersed and then I go out and become consumed by it. So for me, it wasn't long after that I decided I was going to put away all of my former tools. And if I had an animal walk away from me at liberty because I didn't have my other tools in my hand, and I only had my pouch and my clicker and my food reinforcers, it's like, wait. So I actually kind of went on a sabbatical and I just said, all right, use the tools. Because it is pretty easy to grab for a tool that's comfortable and familiar and say, oh, that's all right, I'll do that positive reinforcement stuff tomorrow. So I know myself well enough to know that I went on ahead and got immersed. But I've also seen other people that really wanted to do it and didn't want to take that approach. So that's why I say, you know, honor yourself and make a commitment. And it's okay to make small bits of progress. You don't have to do it the way I did, but that's just how I did. Just how I did it.
And so when you say you took a sabbatical, what does that look like? What does that mean?
I put away all of my other tools. I hung up all the other tools. I put the pouch on and had the clicker. And if I needed to move a horse from paddock A to paddock B, I had to learn what to do to make that happen. So if I didn't have pressure and I didn't have those other tools, then I'd better learn how to target, or I'd better teach my horse to walk with me and reinforce. It's like loose lead healing. So then I started focusing on every single movement, forward, backward, front end, hind end, and halting. And I really trained that extensively at Liberty so that the animals were comfortable healing with me. Then I went back and said, well, now that I have that feeling, they follow my body language, can I add verbal cues to these behaviors? So I began to explore them in depth. But that's the kind of sabbatical I did. I didn't have people riding my horses. I didn't even ride them for a little while as I started working it through. But I'm a little back to that thing where I just embraced it fully.
A metaphor that's kind of helped me think about starting a business years ago when I started Animal Training Academy, because I just didn't know nothing. I didn't know anything. was that I kind of felt like I was jumping into the deep end of a swimming pool without knowing how to swim and just kind of splashing around until I learned how to float. Was that what it was like? Were you just kind of like, okay, cool, jumping in that deep end, I'm going to figure this out?
Absolutely. You know, if the horse turned around and walked away from me, like, no, I'm going to go over here and do this thing. It's like, oh man, now what do I do? Okay, well, I know how to target. They learned how to target, so I'll do a few of those. And I agree. That was self-imposed, and I don't necessarily recommend it, but I say don't be afraid of the water because it's kind of interesting. But to motivate people, again, I like to say, hey, 5 minutes a day. Same with trailer loading, some of the big tasks that people are afraid to approach. You know, it's too hard. I can't do this. I need to have an hour and a half a day to train. No. 5 minutes a day on any project will get you there. And I'm a firm believer in that. So maybe I learned something from my own journey too. You know, it's okay to take the time.
And so when you're going right back now, you're a kid and you're at Universal Studios and the presenters are going, oh no, here comes that girl again.
I know they are. They're like, what was her name? Oh, I know it's Peggy, right? No. Yeah, they got to know me by name. They're like, oh no.
What? And so you said it wasn't your time then to pursue the training stuff. Before you were doing clinics and teaching others, what was your day job? Have you just always done horse stuff?
Or No. A lot of people will be surprised at this, but it was music. And I played piano as three, and I started at three. I mean, I have a little recital brochure at four, a little program, and there was my name in it. So I was just barely four when I was probably playing something like March of the Middle Sea Twins, you know, something really basic. But I went through school and college. My degree in college was music. But and then I got a master's in counseling, which is another story. And then I started branching out into sports and sports psychology. And I learned a lot from a PhD in behaviorism. And so that was along the way. But it was music. And I actually, other things through the entire life, has been teaching people to play the piano. Most people don't know that about me.
I love how you said, and then I got a PhD in behaviorism, and that was just kind of along the way. That's kind of
Deal. Wait. I did not get a PhD. Sorry. I studied with a PhD.
Oh, you studied with a PhD.
I studied, yeah. We were going to do a sports psychology center. We were going to help people perform and in enhancing their performance through the use of behaviorism.
I understand. Sorry about my misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I would like to, but I got a master's in counseling.
It's awesome. By the way, I have no idea what March of the Middle Sea Twins
anybody that's a musician is gonna go, oh god. So basically I just played a couple of notes and then I was in my first recital, so it's something really basic.
So two questions. One is something that I've just been exploring, asking guests from the previous episode to this, because our previous episode, Melinda Di Martini was a statistician, and so she actually was able to use a lot of her previous skills from that role in what she does now. So I'm curious, with your musical background, sport coaching, was it background? Have you been able to bring stuff into your animal training teaching that?
Absolutely. And it's interesting, Ryan, because I do feel like where I am now is a culmination of all of that. But if I were to say the two things I learned, both teaching and performing. Okay, so the performing would be that in order to learn a piece or anything well enough to perform it, I had to practice it well. And I learned how to break the song down into small bits and practice it. It is no different than shaping and building a sequence and building behavior chains. Really, to be able to perform music from memory, it's a long behavior chain. So I learned about behavior chains that way. And for me, shaping and working with animals to build small bits of information into larger bits of information is just the same thing I learned as a musician. Also, the timing and the timing of training. I think that we haven't explored that enough. And I would love if anybody out there has information on timing and training and how much we can influence behavior by being repetitive, almost like a metronome, so that the animal can read us better. I think that's an exquisite playground. It fascinates me. On my own training, I explore it all the time. And I do see when people are learning this, that their ability to maintain a sense of rhythm can really change how they train. So that was a really, really big aspect of what I learned in terms of music.
An exquisite playground. I like that. And the second question that I've been playing with recently is, if 2018 Peggy could go back to that day with those kids and that pony, if you could say something to that Peggy now, what would you say to her?
Okay. I was either going to cry or laugh at the chance of doing that. The part of me that wanted to cry, it's like I would say, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry you had to see that. The other part of me, I'd want to say, like the Wizard of Oz, ignore that man behind the curtain. You know, ignore that woman you just saw because that isn't it. Don't. You know, cancel, clear, erase. I would love to be able to say, and I've done so since, just, you know, that there are such options out there. We do not have to use those techniques. Explore the options, you know, and thank you. I would say thank you for giving me a wake-up call.
Beautiful. And just before we move on to the main meat and topic of this podcast episode, can you tell everyone where they can go to find out more information about you now, get in touch, find out what you're up to, et cetera, et cetera?
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. I do have a Facebook group called Clicker Training Horses, Peggy Hogan, and I do run a lot of classes. One of my groups is a more open group, although we do have people answer a few questions. And then I do have a site, clickertraininghorses.com. And I also have a site called thebestwhisperersaclick.com. And the reason why I don't recommend it as much is because nobody can remember the name, even if it is a catchy title, and never use it as a website address or your email address because it's way too long. So I started clickertraininghorses.com. So you can find out about classes. And but Facebook is another great medium. And Lori Higgins and I do a lot of courses on Facebook. You know, we use that medium. So
wonderful. And we'll link to all of this in the podcast to write up. So if you want to get those links, head over to animaltrainingacademy.com, find this podcast episode, and you'll be able to go to it all directly from there. Hey, I absolutely love hearing about people's behavioral odysseys, as I like to call them. So thank you very much for sharing. Moving forward, I'd really like to talk about two words that we talk about a lot in this podcast show, and they are choice and control. But today we're going to narrow that focus down into the horse training world. So let's start a conversation about choice and control in the horse training world. Peggy, can you maybe start by just defining what these two words mean for you?
For me, yes. So for me, choice for me means I set up my training environment so that the animal is choosing to participate, and the animal is choosing to participate because it can rely on the fact, it trusts the fact, the animal knows that there is something in it for them, that their behavior makes me wake up, that they can earn their reinforcers, that they can offer behavior to me and I value what they offer. So the choice would be they are free to participate. If I goof up and my rate of reinforcement falls too much and they walk away, they're not going to get in trouble for that. And control would be, I'm going to focus the word control more on especially things like medical procedures where they might I'm asking them to do something that might be considered aversive. So we're going to say shots or any of those kinds of things. So I give them the control over the procedure with what I'm going to call start buttons. And I know you've had Ava Bertelsen on and obviously Susan Friedman. And that's a pretty hot topic. And we did, Ava and I and Emily Johnson-Vay did 4 years of lectures at Clicker Expo on the whole topic of animals in control. And this year I get to do a lecture about horses in control, and they're going to do their own lecture. So we're actually not together this year. But the control, again, with horses, so many horses are taken into an area where they're enclosed and a line is hooked up to each side of their halter and to a pole. So they can't leave. That's called a cross tie. So the animal is basically, there is no choice and there is no control. And that's where most things happen. And even if you tie an animal up with one line, so that just a single line is tied to a pole with their halter, they learn pretty quickly that there is no control. And horses, this was from Bob Bailey, horses have the unique ability to tolerate their situation. And it's amazing what they will tolerate. I think they're an amazing animal. And we can do a lot of things to horses. They don't cry out in pain. Generally speaking, they don't. And they put up with a lot. So for me to approach this animal with this wonderful new way of looking at things that we're calling start buttons, or they could be called MANs, they could be called initiator signals, lots of different things. But to have these start buttons where the animal says, yes, I'm ready, and then I can continue with the procedure or whatever it is that I'm doing at the moment, even down to just giving them a bath or something.
All right, beautiful. And so let's unpack this even more. You said start buttons are a hot topic right now. For those listening who might not have heard of start buttons or haven't trained a start button, what does that look like? Can you operationalize an example of that for us with one of your horses?
Thank you. Yes, thank you for asking that. There are different ways of having the horse tell me, as if B.F. Skinner, we could call it a MAND, only it's not verbal. But there are different ways the horse can tell me that they're ready to begin a procedure. We could take a behavior that's already trained. Some people like to have the animal touch a target. If the animal touches the target, then the person will move. Let's say if they're giving a shot, the horse touches the target, and then the person moves towards the neck, where they might give the shot and maybe stroke the horse. The person will not move to the neck of the horse until that horse does touch the target. That's one way of doing it. The horse does a behavior that's trained, previously trained, and that becomes the initiator signal or the start button. There are other ways of doing it too, but that's the first way.
And is this, would you say, new to the majority of horse trainers? When you're teaching this stuff to someone who doesn't know what a start button is or is kind of not really experimented with, shall we say, choice and control with their horses, they've still got them tied up when they're doing behaviors. What are some of the challenges that you've found people come across?
It is new, Ryan, and for lots of good reasons. I mean, there are many people out there trying to work with their horses. They're not professional trainers, and they're trying to do these things themselves, and it can be dangerous. A horse can pull back. A horse can do a lot of damage to a person when they're struggling. So that's why people tend to want to have these cross ties and methods of restraint. But this business of a start button, and again, I only listed the one, I've been sort of pushing and trying to introduce. Now, let me see. I'm trying to think. It's been at least 6 or 7 years that I've been trying to say, look, this is really cool. You've got to try this. And slowly but surely, horse people are beginning to say, this is interesting. And then with the lectures and some of the things like Chirag Patel, you know, his bucket game, the dog people are quicker to embrace it. And now through that group, people in the horse community are saying, well, this looks kind of interesting. So it is, it's not that well known, although I'm hearing it more on Facebook and it's becoming a more hot topic. So we are seeing it spring up.
And so you said horses can cause a lot of damage when they're struggling. So I can appreciate, and I'm not a horse trainer and I don't teach people about horse training other than producing content with marvelous people like yourself. But I can appreciate that people that's kind of potentially some of the bite back you get when you're introducing this choice and control.
Absolutely. Yes, they're going to look at me and say, there's no way I'm taking this lead rope off to train this animal. But I think it's probably because we've seen so many visual illustrations of pressure techniques being used. I like to call it like, you know, putting a horse in a sardine can in an hour, which is what most trailer loading demonstrations are. We've seen so many behaviors where the animal resists and there's huge extinction bursts and then suddenly the horse is going in the trailer. Or same thing, we're holding clippers up by a horse and the horse is struggling and pulling back and dragging the trainer around and the trainer saying, it's okay, watch, she's going to get softer here any minute. So they can actually use this coercion to get a behavior and it looks effective. But then we have the average person who owns their horse say, well, I want to do this. And then I say, well, okay, let's take the lead rope off. And that seems insane because they haven't seen enough results where we are using these start buttons. And it might look longer, but and in some ways it might be. It depends on the situation and the history of the animal. But certainly most people are going to look at that and say, you're crazy, because they're expecting all of the explosions, because that's what we've seen so much of. And even a person that's really gifted at training without the big dynamic efforts that the horse can make to resist, even if they're softer than that, it's still lots of behavior that is resistant. That's usually what we're exposed to.
All right. And so you've talked and you've mentioned the word liberty training a few times in this podcast. So just before we move on, because I'm going to build on this, but if people are listening, because we've got horse trainers listening, we've got zookeepers listening, we've got dog people listening and everything in between, there might be some people that don't really know what that means. I mean, we're talking about restraining horses at the moment and how that might be a little bit of bite back to this idea. Can you just define that term liberty training for us? And then once you've done that, I'm just going to build on that a little bit.
You bet. So for me, liberty training means I'm going to take the halter and the lead off the rope, off the horse. I'm going to take the halter and lead rope off of the horse, and I'm going to put them in an environment where they could be in a pasture. I don't mean in a round pen. And so it's up to me to use my reinforcers and wisely and use my criteria to make it so that the horse participates. So for me, liberty training is just taking off any tool of coercion and using my reinforcers, my positive reinforcers.
And so let's say I'm a listener of this podcast and I've got my halter and I've got my lead rope on, and I'm sorry, what did you call it before when you've got the horse tied up to two different points?
Cross ties. They're called cross ties.
When you've got them cross tied. But I'm very interested in this choice and control stuff that you're talking about. So I'm a listener of this podcast. That's where I am, but I'm interested in this idea. Going back to what you talked about earlier, where one thing you suggested was potentially, rather than jumping in the deep end of the swimming pool, just kind of breaking it down, shaping yourself and doing small things at a time. Do you think for someone in that position, it's and just because you additionally identified the potential risk associated there, I don't know, you're going to have to tell me, do you think we should just go to liberty, or do you think there's kind of a transition period? Like, how do we go from one to the other?
Well, that's where protected contact comes in. And there's a lot to be learned from just, if you imagine a zoo animal, there's a lot to be learned from having a horse on one side of a fence and the human on the other, a little bucket they can toss the treat into if they want to, and learning how to reinforce the animal's choice for moving towards us. There's a lot to be gained from that. So the people that get Mustangs, they learn that real well, that they have this animal that is going to be afraid and they're not going to go in with it, and they learn about protected contact. So it's a good way to learn about liberty training. If you have a horse that's already comfortable and safe and well-versed in most of the traditional methods, certainly if you want to leave your halter on and you want to leave your lead rope and you want to take that lead rope and drape it around the horse's neck so that you can't grab it and make the animal do it, then I would say get started with the basics of just how to help the animal learn that its small amounts of behavior will pay off generously from your ability to watch what it's giving you and then click and reinforce.
Help the animal learn small amounts of behavior will pay off generously. I love that. So let's build on this a little bit more as well. Because I'm just trying to aim this conversation currently, and we can shift gears a little bit at people that are potentially making that transition. So protective contact is one thing we can try. Can you offer maybe, let's make a list of like five things that you can suggest to people who want to implement more choice and control in their training?
Absolutely. Okay. So start with protected contact, and you have to teach the horse first that its behavior matters. Most people start with a target. We used to charge the clicker, but most people start with a target, and the animal can learn that touching that target, there's a payoff. Trust me, the horse has not learned clicker training in that first behavior. They touch targets easily, but that doesn't mean they understand the click. So another behavior I like to start with is just slightly rocking back so that the animal steps back out of the person's space, and that can be shaped actually very quickly. I don't mean stepping into the horse and moving it away. I mean learning how to watch the small motions of a horse rocking its weight back and clicking and reinforcing that. So for me, a foundation lesson is first having the horse step away slightly backwards. And then, of course, targeting. And then having the animal learn that if it keeps its head forward and not turning towards my treat pouch, but keeping the head forward, if we'll click and pay for the head being forward and step towards the horse to feed, we can keep them in this safer position. Those are easy things to accomplish generally speaking, and people can learn how to watch behavior and let the animal offer this behavior. And just parenthetically, I'd like to say, even in the people that know how to use negative reinforcement, they have to learn how to time the release, because again, that's what teaches. It's the release that teaches. So if you've developed your eye to learn how to release, that's really what we're doing. Instead of feeling for a release, we're looking for small amounts of what we want and reinforcing that. And so that's a good place. Train yourself to look for, not feel for, but look for small amounts of behavior that you can reinforce with your food instead of by your release. That's a good start.
So just to repeat, those five are protective content. Start with a target and then
teach the horse to rock back. So moving away from our space, turning the head away from us or away from our treat pouch. So that's four, isn't it? So you want one more just for fun?
I think the fifth one. So I've got protective contact, start with target, that rocking back and forth, keeping the head forward away from the food pouch. Number five that I've written down here on my list is just learn how to watch behavior.
Yes, learn how to watch behavior.
And what are some, let's unpack that one a little bit more. Is that going and just watching our horse, or are you saying that by using our clicker and teaching targets, that's when we're learning how to watch behavior?
That, the thing you just said. And really, Ryan, one of the things I absolutely love to do to teach people about shaping is to put an item, not something they're going to be afraid of, but put an item in with the horse and watch how the horse explores it. They'll bump it with their nose. They'll look at it. They'll dip their head. They might move their hoof towards it. Horses are wonderful. They're quite curious. And if you watch how your horse explores a new item, you're going to be learning a lot, because you can use that behavior and reinforce the basic act of exploring something new. And that builds, I'm going to use the word courage. In other words, it builds confidence. We should operationalize those. Thank you, Susan Friedman. But basically, you can build confidence by reinforcing the animal for exploring its environment. Honor what it brings to the party. Or in my favorite quote is, ride the horse the direction it's going.
Ride the horse in the direction it's going and yep. Reinforce what it brings to the party.
There you go.
I love that. Hey, thank you so much for that. We've talked about start buttons and how we could potentially start to incorporate those. What are some other ways you would say that you incorporate the definitions that you offered us here today, choice and control in your training and work with horses?
So ways that I incorporate it. Really, honestly, everything I do now honors this place. And it's taken me years to develop this in my own eye. And that is, I offer cues when I know the animal is looking at me with the idea of it wants to engage. You know, I think this is going to sound so silly by comparison, but dog people are pretty used to having an animal's attention. But you would be surprised how we were taught to be around horses. It's you walk off and that lead rope is going to tell the animal to go, whether the animal is ready or not. And there's so much emphasis in the horse world about the animal it's his responsibility to pay attention to us. And I would say if any one thing happened with the start buttons, it was teaching me to have even more focus on the animal who is ready to engage. So if I want to say it's ready to engage when we walk leading, which I do now, if it's ready to engage when I hold up a brush just to brush it or curry it, if it's ready to engage when I need to, I've taught one of my horses to open his mouth and have his mouth licked at, so we've got all of these dental things that we have to do with them, ready to engage to have the feet done by the farrier. All of these things that I do on a daily basis now have they all have little start buttons. It's that the animal is more attentive and gives me more signals that they're ready to be together and train. Susan calls it dialogue training. I love that. I love that word for it. So I'm in much more dialogue with my animals now than I was even, let's say, 10 years ago.
You've got all these little start buttons. We've talked about target training. as a way of giving the animal the ability to communicate to you. They're ready to go. Can you run
What's
through the
other way?
Yeah. Can you run through some of the other ones? So
yes, because this is hard, and it's really, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Ryan, but this, the second one is much harder to explain for me. It's easier for me to demo, but I'm going to give it my best shot. And when we're training, there is a, and I hope this is well described enough so that you and the audience can grab onto this, because it is so wonderfully powerful. So imagine that, yes, we have a training clock, you know, that we have behavior that starts, we have the training cycle, we have the click, then we introduce the food, and there's time, there is behavior that happens between when I click and hand the animal the food. And then the very same thing, as the animal is chewing and preparing for the next repetition, there's this play zone. And this is the play zone, the area where the start buttons start to develop. This is the area where the animal is chewing, but then they are bringing their attention back. So if I were to describe this, I'll see if I can. Let's say I hold up a pair of clippers. If I hold up the clippers, the animal turns to look, and then I feed them. So we're basically going to actually start with like classical conditioning, but with a twist. I hold the clippers up and feed. Hold the clippers up, feed. Hold the clippers up, feed. After enough repetitions, as I watched, and if I'm really good at establishing a rhythm, out of that little behavior loop that we have, the animal is going to start to prepare for the next presentation of the clippers. And that's what I look for. Sometimes they will flick their eyes. Sometimes they will flick an ear. Sometimes they turn their head. There are any number of things that go, okay, she's doing this. It's coming again. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. And it's this rhythmic presentation and their anticipation of that next event, they will start to prepare and I will see something in their body. A lot of times it's an ear flick. So the fun part is, once I identify what they're doing to prepare, I then wait just a microsecond until they flick the ear, and then I present the clippers. And this is the part where people go, what did you just say? But so clippers, feed. Now I'm watching. Clippers, ear, feed. Clippers, ear, feed. I go, oh yeah, I got an ear. Clippers, ear, feed. And then I wait. The ear goes, then I present the clippers, and then I feed. Ear goes, then I present the clippers, then I feed. So in effect, what'll happen is the animal goes, oh my goodness, my behavior, so we're operant here, my behavior, the ear flick, is making these clippers show up. And then I feed. Now, I don't present the clippers until I see the ear. And this takes a little bit of time to develop, but not much, maybe four sessions. Emily sent me a great video. She's got a puppy and she had a start button with this within two sessions. It was really, really fun to see. So it's this, so that I wait till the ear flicks, I present the clippers, and then I feed. And from there, I build more of the dialogue. So the clippers will move closer to the body, or the clippers turn on, or any of the sequence I build into this starts with this start button of the ear flick. And I don't proceed without it. Boy, I hope that came across.
It did. And if you're listening to this podcast, I mean, I had this explained to me earlier this year really nicely with Ava, and started to do it this way as well with Phoebe Dog, my little chihuahua, and it changed everything I did, really, everything. And so you said it's the fun part, waiting to see what they're doing. So to go back a little bit, it's pretty much just waiting to see what they bring into the party and then using that as a start button.
Yes, it's like what they do before what I do, and what they do before what they do, what they do. It gets really intricate.
Whoa, we got meta here.
I know. But it's true. We're watching these minute little bits of behavior that crop into the training, and it's a result of our ability to create rhythmic training so that they have expectations of what's going to happen. It's fun, isn't it, Ryan?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's just cool.
And yeah. when the animal gets it, and then the beautiful thing is, especially when you're doing the husbandry stuff or something that the animal might not enjoy as much, it's such clear communication to you. For example, if you start to get latency in them presenting that start button or something, you can kind of use that as data to read where your animal's at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The latency is a big, or just flat refusal to do it. And that's the reason why I kind of like, I do like these ones that arise out of the training a little bit more than just touching a target. Because sometimes if the target's in front of them, they can keep touching it. And that's confusing to me. So if I have a target in front of them, they touch it. You know, you can do it, but I'm just saying for me, watching them arise out of the training is really fun. That's been the fun part for me.
And so a popular question people ask, I think, I don't know if this is anecdotal or it is actually a question I get asked a lot, but obviously one of the big activities we do with our horses is riding. So how do you incorporate choice and control start buttons into your riding?
That's really interesting. Well, for one, I'm going to take a step back and say my path of training is maybe a little longer than some, but not necessarily. I think it just depends on how you approach it. But for the most part, I train everything with shaping so that the motions I get, whether it's forward, backward, you know, moving the front end, hind end, walk, trot, canter transitions, I like to shape those behaviors without pressure and without tools. So my horses are already doing those behaviors that I will use for their riding. And then again, I put those behaviors on a verbal cue, and then I start adding tactile cues. So that by the time I put a halter and lead on the horse already knows what I want it to do. I can cue it any number of ways. And then I will use, and I happen to have chosen to ride in headgear that doesn't include a bit. So that by the time I add a tactile cue that includes a halter, I can apply the feel of the halter, new cue. Then I can say, and ho, which is the old cue, click treat. So I'm swapping out cues. Basically, the animal knows what to do. Now I've just added a new cue that happens to be a halter. So for me, it would be the same thing in terms of sitting on their back. I like to have, of course, they're going to be desensitized to having something on their back. But it's really fun to have a rider sitting up there. They can do a new cue, let's say lifting the rein. I can say the words and ho, and I'm on the ground. And so we can swap out cues that way. So is the animal, you know, the animal's participating. I still use food. I still use scratching. I still have the other reinforcers I use. And that can include going to a favorite place to graze. So I'm using every reinforcer I possibly can. But basically, the animal does have choice. And I'm going to say the only place I say they don't have choice is if both of us are at risk. I do have cues that are in place, and I do have pressure signals that are in place, meaning I will apply pressure to have a horse circle or come to a stop if I think we're at risk. So in that bank account, am I withdrawing from that bank account? It's possible. But for all of the behaviors that we have going forward where we are using cues that are already in place, I would say I feel much better about the withdrawal if the horse... it happened the other day. Pauline was visiting when Pauline was here, and we took two of the minis for a walk up the street. Something startled one of them, and he took about 6 steps forward. Well, you know, some lead rope pressure kept the animal from running out into the street. It wasn't a big yahoo. But I know the animal felt pressure on the lead rope. Pauline said it wasn't much, but the animal knew that he was going to stop. And it wasn't my and ho that stopped him because he startled and moved towards, you know, the street. So yes, I do have pressure, but it's really minimally used. I think they have more choice and control in this way of riding.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we've covered a lot of ground in the time. I mean, obviously we could keep talking about this because you've got a whole segment at Clicker Expo that you talk on this subject. So maybe let's end this conversation about choice and control by telling the listeners, because we will have listeners of the show that are going to be attending Clicker Expo this year and over the coming years. What other aspects do you cover in your Clicker Expo talks or segments, whatever you call them, workshops, that we haven't covered here today?
Oh, wow. Okay. In the years past, and they do sell these videos at Clicker Training, I've done how to train. They call it, the lecture was called When the Floor is Food. So it's how do you train your animal when there's grass on the ground and you've got to get from A to B. And I've got some wonderful techniques for doing this without even needing pressure. I've had trailer loading lectures. I've done lectures on how to teach the very riding behaviors we were just talking about, husbandry lectures. I did a fun lecture on using obstacles in training to help the animal gain confidence and choice, and experimenting with their body coordination by using obstacles before we ever ask them to do anything more complex. That was a really fun lecture. I enjoyed the heck out of that. And I'm actually going to do one in Portland that is kind of looking back through some of the other techniques and other styles of training that we've done, and maybe pulling out some pearls of wisdom, finding some things that we learned from our past that we can bring forward and implement them in a kind of a clicker friendly way. So I'm not just about ditzing everything I've ever done, but how to take the gems that are there and use them with clicker training.
So we'll link to all of this stuff in the podcast write-up once again. So you mentioned there, Peggy. Oh,
God, I'm so sorry. You didn't know you were good. You're good. Do we want to let everybody in on our secret?
Yeah, I was about to jot down a time so we can cut this out, but no, it's too funny. You go. You tell them.
Okay, so my name, Peggy, and the wonderful New Zealand accent that turns E's into I's. So the first time we met for that hour, I was Piggy Hogan, and I just said, Ryan, I can't do. I'll laugh every time if I'm Piggy Hogan the entire. So he was gracious enough to actually experiment with saying it more like an A rather than normally what New Zealanders do with an E.
I'm pretty sure that some people listen to this podcast just because they enjoy the Kiwi accent.
You were so gracious, but it's like, okay, I'm going to laugh every time you say my name. So anyway.
I was about to say, we'll link to your stuff on Karen Breyer Academy website and tell everyone listening though, when the Clicker Expo is this year. You said it's in Portland. And you're looking forward to a whole week of having your name mispronounced when you visit us here in New Zealand in a couple of months.
You know, isn't that exciting? And I can't wait. And I sent you a link to that. Tracy is hosting a clinic at, oh God, help me. Now you're going to laugh at me. Is it Tangamuana Beach?
Tangamuana.
Oh, see. Do it again for me. Tangamuana?
Tangamuana.
Okay. There we go.
Tangamuana.
Tangamuana. See, there it is. Shoes on the other foot. Nope. No, you're right. So we'll have to put up some contact information about that. But I'm going to be there for a 2-day clinic. And then I'm also spending time with just Tracy training. I can't wait. I'm really excited. And I get to meet Ryan. And I get to meet some other people that are a part of your academy. I just can't wait. We have got to do some geek speak and talk about start buttons. Oh my God, I can't wait.
So we'll link to this in the podcast write-up as well. So if you're in Australasia or further afield and you need a reason to come to New Zealand, then it's going to be happening in October. Hey, thank you so much for all of this so far, Peggy. Sadly, we are nearly at the end, but that's okay because we're also heading into one of my favorite parts of the show. I call this story time. Could you please share with everyone listening two stories from your experience training animals so far to build on that great one you shared with us at the start of the show and the important lessons that these taught you?
Oh, yeah. And I did share that early. I know you told me to have my stories, but I really wanted people to hear that because it was super important. A story, this is interesting. This is spontaneous, but I train my horses a recall, an emergency recall. And I do so because it's fun. I love watching my horses gallop in towards me when they're out in a pasture. It's just too darn fun. But along with that, making the emergency recall, I think really vital because we don't know what's going to happen with our horses. And so I was here in Santa Barbara. I am here in Santa Barbara. I live in this county. And last December, we had this horrific fire. Up to that point, it had been our state's largest fire. And we had to evacuate several times. Brought the horses back. We were just ecstatic. There was ash everywhere, but I couldn't resist. I just let the four horses on the lower part of the pasture out to run around. And my friend and I were standing there just beaming ear to ear to watch these little guys tear around the pasture. And they were ecstatic and they were kicking and running because they had been in stalls, which they're not used to. And I watched them charge around. And the next thing I knew, they were charging around outside of the pasture up the hill towards her house, which is not their normal place. And one of the firemen had left one of the main gates open that's not visible. And we never come in and out of that gate. I wouldn't have ever thought to check it. So there the horses are, having been cooped up for weeks and charging around a property where we definitely have stuff they could get into trouble with. And it reminds me of the movie Finding Nemo, where Marlin goes like, good feelings gone. You know, I can't tell you what it feels like to be ecstatic and suddenly going, oh, my God, my horses are all going to die and run out in the street. But I ran and grabbed a pouch and I started my emergency recall. And one of the horses came in immediately, which just was incredible. And then slowly but surely, the two other horses that knew the recall turned around and quit cavorting about, and they came into me. And then finally, the fourth horse, who didn't have a recall at all, and that's my friend's horse, which we're now working on his recall, kind of stopped to eat grass and whatever. But I guess I want to say the lesson for that is, you know, even though they're horses and we expect that we have control because they have lines, go on ahead and train a recall because it's really valuable. And it became apparent, really apparent on that particular experience that, and horses will run off. And when they're in a group, you can just kind of pretty much say, oops, goodbye. And yet they were in a group charging around and they responded to their recall. So that was a fun story, fun, interesting. The other thing I'm going to say is when you approach the task of learning how to use positive reinforcement and how to teach your horse to offer behavior, if you go that route, if you go the route of using, shaping, capturing, targeting, letting them offer behavior, please, 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 please learn how to teach a cue. Because with rope cues, with when we're handling the ropes, most people think they have it all in place because the rope and the pressure is really what's telling the animal to do. And they'll assume that they have a cue with the behavior. But what'll happen is with the more pressure-free training you do, the more the animal's going to want to engage. And suddenly you're going to have an animal that's throwing behaviors at you right and left. The dog people know what I'm talking about. You know, when they would say that the dog throws behavior at us or throws a sit. But horse people are like, oh my God, my horse has gone crazy. Now I need to train for calm. Now I need to train them because they have the wrong attitude. Or I told you they were going to dominate me. Or I told you this was disrespect. And they run into all those fear buttons that come up for people. And it isn't. It's you got to learn about stimulus control. And I do mean learn about it, because then you're going to have an animal that the discretionary effort of performing a cue is just unbelievable. It is a joy to be around an animal that will actually respond to a cue without pressure, respond to a cued behavior, and also not offer it when you didn't ask for it. And that's big, because people jump into clicker training, they get all these fun things, and then they hate it. It's like good feelings gone again with Marlin and Finding Nemo, because suddenly they have an animal throwing behavior. And then they say, we don't like clicker training anymore. I don't want to do it because my animal's out of control. Learn about stimulus control. Please, 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 please.
And what are some steps that you can offer for people to start on this journey of learning about stimulus control?
So stimulus control is the animal has learned how to back up. It's doing so readily. And now I need to have the animal learn the signal that says back up, whether it's the word back or whether it's a rope cue or whether it's a body language cue. So they also need to learn how to not back up. So the horse needs to learn how to stand and wait until you say the word back. The horse needs to learn how to differentiate so that when you say the word back, it will back. And if you say the word walk on or gesture, that the horse will walk forward or walk on and not off of the back. So it's specific. And check Ryan's site. There are articles and an amazing number of people that have a vast knowledge on what cues are about. So embrace that. Take advantage of the wealth of knowledge that's already in the site that you are frequenting and loving. And that's a really, and then take courses. I would say if you needed to do a cue course, it's going to be worth every penny to do some sort of cue course to learn that.
And we do have some episodes to where you can go and build on this idea a little bit more rather than dive too deep into it right now. So Sarah Owings, a couple of episodes ago, we talked about making stimulus control sexy again. And and with Morton E earlier in the year, we talked about stimulus control and fluency and free shaping. So it's another great episode. So I'll link to both of those.
Oh, it was a good episode, yeah.
I'll link to both of those on the write-up for this episode so you can easily find those. Or you can just go to the main podcast page and scroll back. Thank you for directing people to that resource. There's a lot there for you if you want to go and spend hours. You've got some travel in front of you. Well, those stories were wonderful, and sadly this does bring us to our final question for this episode.
What's the winning lottery number? No, sorry. Yes. What's the meaning of life? 42. I got that one nailed. Okay.
Is it 42?
Sorry. Yeah, is 42 is the meaning of life. It's called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I just dated myself.
No. The answer is 42. That's the second time The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has been mentioned in the last two pieces of content that we've created, so it's very relevant. Go read it. So long and thanks for all the fish. No, we're not finished.
There you go. That's another good one.
We're not finishing just now. But before we do finish, we started off way back in your kids' camp with your pony and the children. But this time I'm going to ask you to take us into the future. What do you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years in the animal training world, the horse training world of choice and control? What is your vision?
I just want to see people learn how to shape behaviors, you know, learn what shaping is about. It is lesser explored with horses. I'd say that the dog community and even the zoo community is ahead of us. We just got done learning from the cowboys in natural horsemanship, and it was a big movement, and it's captured the imagination of a lot of people. So people are reluctant to try and learn something new. But I'm going to say, get over it and go learn something new. Go embrace what it's like to shape behaviors. And when you do, you're going to find this change, this discretionary effort that, again, I learned that from Susan Friedman, just that how much the animals are willing to do. Horses are amazingly willing. So go learn that. Go play in that zone.
Fantastic, and thank you for sharing your vision. The show is nearly 3 years old, so in 48 months, we're going to be able to look back at those early episodes and see the answers to those questions and how far we've come.
So isn't that cool?
It is. It's very exciting.
This is great, Ryan. I so appreciate to be on this show with you. It's just an honor and a privilege.
And we additionally appreciate you. I'm going to go hard on my gratitude to you very soon. But before we do, just remind everyone listening where they can go to find you online and get in touch and find out what you're up to.
Facebook, it's clickertraininghorses/Peggy Hogan. And online, it would be clickertraininghorses.com. That's the quickest, easiest way.
Perfect. And once again, they will all be linked to in the write-up for this episode. So now let's pour this bucket of gratitude over you, Peggy. Thanks today for taking a couple of hours to connect with me and record this. We made some fun videos to send to our friends beforehand. We connected about a month or so ago and spoke for a good hour and a half then. We've been sending messages back and forth. So all of the time and effort that you've put into connecting with me, and which has all been leading up to creating this piece of content so that we can help more people and help more animals. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a privilege. And I can't wait till I'm there in October.
Yeah, me neither. We are going. It's wonderful because everyone just wants to come to New Zealand. So I get to meet everyone.
Isn't that fun? Yeah, that's really, really. Yeah, that's fun.
I think we've had at least 3 podcast guests come to visit me in New Zealand this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Fun.
So if you're coming to New Zealand, send a message to me. You can find me on Facebook and let's catch up because I know a lot of people head this way. All of you listening out there, we, of course, really appreciate you tuning in today as well and taking time out of your days to come and hang out with us. If you have enjoyed this episode and if you're here right at the end, then likely you have, and you're interested in carrying on this conversation about working with your animals in the most positive, funnish, choice rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of the episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as a Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There is something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there for today. Thank you so much again for listening. You'll hear from us again soon. So long, and thanks for all the fish.